Katie, with an I. She worked at the same grocery store I did. Her nails were chipped black, her hair different shades of raven. Katie was quick, sarcastic, and cynical, but warm too. She was a cartoon in a way, not out of place in her favorite show, Invader Zim. Untouchable and yet viscerally real. Her head swam in the clouds where her body swam in her torn, oversized jeans, marked all over with doodles of her own design. Together, as we bagged groceries, we would make fun of our coworkers, our managers, and the entire corporate structure that we had, it felt, unwittingly bought into. We talked like lions, but we grazed like lambs, trading poetry back and forth on the backs of discarded receipts. We created whole worlds on those 4 8-hour shifts, worlds I still visit in my head. Katie feels like my hometown of Austin. We felt stuck inside of everyone's expectations of us. We wanted to get out, even if it was just down the road to the University of Texas. You know, before we took New York, before we took LA. I've dreamed about California like someone I wanted to marry, but just hadn't met yet. Katie had a dark past, one she never liked to talk about, but it always made it seem like her life started when I met her. And I did get out. To UT, and then New York, Manhattan, married on the Upper East Side. Some days when I was drunk and stumbling back to my apartment on 90th and Lex, I would think of Katie. I would think of how she would say I still hadn't gotten out at all. I was still trapped in the competitive capitalist dogma that we spent all that time bitching about. I wasn't free. And neither was Katie. Despite an incredible artistic talent, Katie floated in and out of community college and odd jobs, living with her parents. We mostly lost touch. Until one day, I don't remember how it happened, but I saw her in Austin. And it was nothing like old times. See, Katie had found Jesus, had devoted her life to him. Her art was now exclusively religious, as was her thinking. She did end up going to California, but only for a religious retreat. I know because she asked me for money for it. Katie felt like my hometown of Austin, Texas. You know, it was still the same place, but it looked so different. And I had trouble even remembering why we were so in love in the first place. The Wonder Years takes this feeling and examines it over 13 anthemic songs. Suburbia, I've given you all, and now... Well, now I'm David Callison, and this is The Sound and the Story. Moved all my shit to my parents' basement and down to my own apartment. Lansdale, Pennsylvania is a small town about 30 miles north of Philadelphia. In this small town, in 2005, a band called The Premiere broke up. The Premiere apparently had 10 million members, and most of them immediately formed a new band. Casey Cavalier was on lead guitar, Matt Brush played rhythm guitar, Josh Martin the bass, Mike Kennedy played the drums, Mikey Kelly was on the keys, and Dan Soupy Campbell was on vocals. Dan's nickname, Soupy, came from his last name, Campbell. Campbell Soup. Soupy. Got it? Great. They called themselves the Wonder Years, not after the early 90s coming-of-age sitcom of the same name, starring Fred Savage as Kevin Arnold and Danica McKellar as America's ultimate crush, Winnie Cooper, but after an essay Soupy's teacher wrote, Regardless, the band put out various EPs over the next 2 years on small local labels. Surprisingly, given their future emotional, earnest output, the Wonder Years started as a joke band. They had songs like "About to Get Fruit Punched, Homie," "I Fell in Love with a Ninja Master," and "This Is Real, I Ain't Saying He a Gold Digger, Psych." Here's a bit of the first song they wrote, Buzz Aldrin, "Poster Boy for Second Place." As the story goes, they wrote that first song as a joke, but their friends all dug it, and so they continued down that path. In 2007, they signed to No Sleep Records and recorded their full-length debut, Get Stoked on It. It was well-received among the punk scene, although the old man yelling at the clouds of punk rock, punknews.org, gave the record a one-star review saying, "It's hard to get stoked about anything on Get Stoked on It. The only thing I'm stoked on listening to this album is jumping through a wood chipper." Supi has since disowned this record, saying it was simply a joke record and a, quote, unmitigated disaster. The producer tried to have his name removed from the liner notes. But most folks were stoked on it, and the band started touring across the globe. They then put out a quick EP called Won't Be Pathetic Forever, which, while it still had city song titles like Mike Kennedy is a Bad Friend and Solo and Chewy Holding It Down, the EP hinted at the more sincere songwriting Supi would do later in the band's career. Supi has said that this EP is where the band truly begins, and they should have changed the band's name before releasing it. But since they had recognition, and it was all the same personnel, and because it probably helps to have more than four songs to play live, they kept the name. The band was now living in Philly, most of them all staying in the same house. It was here that Supi and the gang came up with the "We're Not Sad Anymore" philosophy. This philosophy was channeled into their 2010 album, The Upsides. Here's how Supi described it right before the album was released. "The Upsides is just about not living in a world of self-defeating bullshit. My friend Max said it best last night when he said that he stopped listening to hardcore and started listening to hip-hop because he'd rather hear songs about how fucking cool someone thinks they are than songs about self-hatred. Every song I listened to for a long time was about being sad, and that doesn't make sense because I don't want to be sad. Ideally, I'd like to be a normal, happy, balanced person. And while that might not be the easiest task in the world, I want to work towards it anyway. The Upside is all about that goal. Yes, sometimes we're depressed. Yes, sometimes I don't want to get out of bed. But really, I don't have it that bad, and I don't want to stay that way forever." As someone who was once a young person with depression, I completely understand this sentiment. Kevin Devine, per usual, said it best, "'Cause lately I've had to come to grips with scope and figure how my problems stack up in a world 2 steps from ruin. Well, either way, I realize that my shit's about as small as it could be, but that makes me feel worse for even feeling this bad in the first place." I think what you realize as you grow older, and I think Supi did as well, is that our personal problems exist right alongside the world's greatest troubles. It might seem inconvenient to be 23 and depressed when your life is, on paper, going in the right direction, but convenient or not, it's what's happening. There's a war in Syria, and you can't get out of bed. And if you're the one stuck in bed, that's the most important thing to you. And it should be, because when you're stuck in bed, you can't do shit about Syria anyway. So Supi's positive message is a welcome one for sure, but there's a naivete there that Supi himself addresses in other records. Because some days, no matter what, your pants weigh 100 pounds, and your shirt is made of the heaviest lead. Sometimes simply existing is a full day's work, and there ain't no upside to that. But really what the upsides means to people is to never lose hope. And that I can get behind. I'm not sad anymore, I'm just tired of this place. The weight of the world would be okay if it would pick a shoulder to lean on so I could stand up straight.
Like a time.
Speaking of hopeless, the Wonder Years, behind the success of The Upsides, signed to Hopeless Records in May of 2010. Just 1 year later, they released what would be their true breakout record. Titled Suburbia, I've Given You All and Now I'm Nothing, Wait a second. Is that an Allen Ginsberg reference? Oh, for fuck's sake. I knew I should have paid attention in English class. Subi sat down and intentionally wrote a themed concept record. He wanted to answer the question, is the place I lived for so long still my home? At the same time, he was reading Allen Ginsberg's poem America, which is found most famously in the collection with Howl. Now, I'm debating on how much to go into the history of the Beat Poets here, and I'll largely refrain, but most of the bands you like have definitely read and probably cribbed from On the Road by Jack Kerouac, Naked Lunch by William S. Burroughs, and Howl by Allen Ginsberg. These prophets of the Beat Generation ruled the counterculture in the late 50s and would inform much of the intellectual backbone of the 60s hippie generation. Supi, a fan of bands like The Hold Steady and The Gaslight Anthem, who similarly allude to literature, interweaved references and outright quotes from Ginsberg's poem, America. I was going to read it to you myself, which would be dumb because there exists a beautiful reading by Ginsberg set to music by Tom Waits. And on top of that, this is the exact recording that the Wonder Years sampled at the beginning of the record. This is 5 minutes. I'm going to play the entire thing. So skip ahead 5 minutes if you wish. But, you know, come on. When's the last time you really closed your eyes and filled your ears with some poetry? It's good for you.
America. America, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing. America, $2.27, January 17th, 1956. I can't stand my own mind. America, when will we end the human war? Go fuck yourself with your atom bomb. I don't feel good, don't bother me. I won't write my poem till I'm in my right mind. America, when will you be angelic? When will you take off your clothes? When will you look at yourself through the grave? When will you be worthy of your million Trotskyites? America, why are your libraries full of tears? America, when will you send your eggs to India? I'm sick of your insane demands. When can I go into the supermarket and buy what I need with my good looks? America, after all, it is you and I who are perfect, not the next world. Your machinery is too much for me. You made me want to be a saint. There must be some other way to settle this argument. Burroughs is in Tangiers. I don't think he'll come back. Sinister. Are you being sinister, or is this some form of practical joke? I'm trying to come to the point. I refuse to give up my obsession. America, stop pushing. I know what I'm doing. America, the plum blossoms are falling. I haven't read the newspapers for months. Every day somebody goes on trial for murder. America, I feel sentimental about the wobbly. America, when I was a kid, I'm not sorry. I smoke marijuana every chance I get. I sit in my house for days on end and stare at the roses in the closet. Whenever I go to Chinatown, I get drunk and never get laid. My mind is made up. There's going to be trouble. You should have seen me reading Marx. I have mystical visions and cosmic vibrations. America, I still haven't told you what you did to Uncle Max after he came home from Russia. I'm addressing you. Are you going to let your emotional life be run by Time magazine? I'm obsessed by Time magazine. I read it every week. Its cover stares at me every time I slink past the corner candy store. I read it in the basement of the Berkeley Public Library. It's always telling me about responsibility. Businessmen are serious. Movie producers are serious. Everybody's serious but me. It occurs to me that I am America. I'm talking to myself again. Asia is rising against me. I haven't got a Chinaman's chance. I'd better consider my national resources. National resources consist of two joints of marijuana, millions of genitals, an unpublishable private literature that goes 1,400 mph, and 25,000 mental institutions. I say nothing about my prisons, nor the millions of underprivileged who live in my flower pots under the light of 500 suns. I have already abolished the whorehouses of France. Tangiers are the next to go. My ambition is to be president, despite the fact that I'm a Catholic. America, how can I write a holy litany in your silly mood? I will continue, like Henry Ford. My strophes are as individual as his automobiles, more so they're all different sexes. America, I will sell you strophes, 2,500 apiece, 500 down on your old strophe. America, free Tom Mooney. America, save the Spanish loyalists. America, Sacco and Vanzetti must not die. I am the Scottsboro Boys. America, when I was 7, Mama took me to communist cell meetings. They sold us garbanzos, a handful per ticket. A ticket cost a nickel and the speeches were free. Everybody was angelic and sentimental about the workers. It was all so sincere, you have no idea what a good thing the party was. In 1835, Scott Nearing was a grand old man, a real mensch. Mother Brewer made me cry. I once saw Israel Amter playing. Everybody must have been a spy. America, you don't really want to go to war. America's them bad Russians. Them Russians, and them Chinamen, and them Russians. The Russia wants to eat us alive. The Russia's power mad. She wants to take our cars from out our garages. Her wants to grab Chicago. Her needs Red Readers' digests. Her wants our auto plants in Siberia. Him big bureaucracy running our filling stations. That no good. Ugh, him make Indians learn read. Him need big black niggers. Ah. Her make us all work 16 hours a day. Help. America, this is quite serious. America, this is the impression I get from looking in the television set. America, is this correct? I'd better get right down with the job. It's true, I don't want to join the army or turn lathes and precision parts factories. I'm nearsighted and psychopathic anyway. America, I'm putting my queer shoulder to the wheel.
Suburbia, I've given you all and now I'm nothing. Uses the Ginsberg poem to bolster the overall theme. Soupy wondering about the definition of home. If this was 2005, I'd play that Garden State quote about a family being a group of people missing the same imaginary place. But if you're listening to this podcast, you probably already know that the best line from Garden State is someone's been pissing on my GameCube and I'm about to crack the case.
You know that point in your life when you realize the house you grew up in isn't really your home anymore? All of a sudden, even though you have some place where you put your shit, that idea of home is gone.
I still feel at home in my house.
You'll see one day when you move out, it just sort of happens one day and it's gone. You feel like you can never get it back. It's like you feel homesick for a place that doesn't even exist. But maybe it's like this rite of passage, you know? You won't ever have that feeling again until you create a new idea of home for yourself, you know, for your kids, for the family you start. It's like a cycle or something. I don't know, but I miss the idea of it, you know? Maybe that's all a family really is. Group of people that miss the same imaginary place.
Soupy and much of the rest of the Wonder Years grew up in Lansdale, Pennsylvania, a suburb about 45 miles outside of Philly. It's a small town, 16,000 people or so, with I think only one public high school, the rest being private Catholic schools. It's a religious town, mostly Catholic and mostly white. As has mentioned on the record, Andrew Berniarski, who played Leatherface in some of the later Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies, lived in Lansdale. Wikipedia also notes that Lansdale is home to a Kugel ball, which is a black sphere that kind of floats on a thin sheet of water. It is somehow so much less impressive than it even sounds. So with the Ginsberg poem and its first line, America, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing, and Soupy's theme of contemplating if his suburban birthplace is really home, we get the full title of the record, Suburbia, I've given you all, and now I'm nothing. To the story of the record, I want to sniff out all the Ginsberg references. We'll start with the track list. Tracks 4, 9, and 13 are entitled Suburbia, I've Given You All, and Now I'm Nothing, respectively. Tracks 4 and 9 are short acoustic interludes specifically about Lansdale itself, and track 13 is the rousing closer. Track 7 is called I Won't Say the Lord's Prayer, which is a line in the poem, as is You Made Me Want to Be a Saint. As I mentioned, the first words you hear when you put on the record are Ginsberg, saying, my mind is made up and there's going to be trouble. And Local Man Ruins Everything, Soupy puts his own twist on Ginsberg's line, I sit in my house for days on end and stare at the roses in the closet. In Summers in PA, he turns America, the plum blossoms are falling, and to the plum blossoms are falling, I'm more than happy going down with them. Soupy changes the year on Ginsberg's America, $2.27, January 17th, 1956, to 2006, which is interestingly Soupy's 20th birthday. Similarly, in Hoodie Weather, Soupy substitutes Burroughs and Tangiers with Rocky in the Deep South in the line, Burroughs is in Tangiers, I don't think he'll come back. It's sinister. Finally, and in Now I'm Nothing, Sunny takes, I'm trying to come to the point. I refuse to give up my obsession. America, stop pushing. I know what I'm doing. And turns it into Suburbia, stop pushing. I know what I'm doing. He then has a lyric that says, I had dreams of myself as the Allen Ginsberg of this generation, but without the talent, madness, or vision. This is a cheeky, self-depreciating comparison to Ginsberg, who is a pioneering thinker of his generation and also tried to levitate the Pentagon. He also had notable hallucinations, what he called visions, of William Blake, so Campbell might be referencing that as well. Soupy ends a record with, I know we've got miles to go, but I'm putting my shoulder to the wheel, which is a distillation of America's America, I'm putting my queer shoulder to the wheel. And I get that this is Soupy's experience, but I would have loved if he had kept queer in there. Suburbia tells the mostly true story of 1 year of Soupy's life, basically the year after The Upsides came out. It tells the story in order, save the interludes of the tracks Suburbia and I've Given You All, and Came Out Swinging is the preamble, setting the stage for the rest of the story. In it, he says, I guess you call this regression. I lost a real job and a girlfriend. Back on the upsides, and then on this record too, he talks about his now ex-girlfriend, Jess. They broke up between the upsides and Suburbia. He was also just months from becoming an accredited school teacher, but he left that idea to commit fully to the Wonder Years. I spent the whole year in airports, and the floor feels like home. He and the band spent the last year touring all over the world, and the first time they had toured to such an extent. Soapy feels placeless and adrift, lost in between the crowds and the clubs, with no real place to call home. He says, I came in here alone. In the background, you can hear the line, but that doesn't scare me like it did 7 months ago. This echoes a line in the final song. I know that I'm introspective when broken, but I've been spending most of my nights here alone, and that doesn't scare me like it did a year ago. So it came out swinging. It seems he's referring to the 7 months before the upsides was recorded. And at the end, he's talking about the year after the upsides. Finally, the song, this prelude, ends with, and I spent the winter writing songs about getting better. And if I'm being honest, I'm getting there. He spent the winter writing the upsides, and it put him on a journey to feel better. The story of the record starts with its second track, Woke Up Older. The title and the song itself is a nod to the Mountain Goats song, Woke Up New. He calls this out specifically in the bridge. Both songs are about the morning after a bad breakup. In the Mountain Goats version, he makes too much coffee. He's used to making it for two, but he drinks it all anyway because his ex hated when he let things go to waste. Soupy has one more night in their place together, and he has to pack his things. So as he's moving, he says, I stacked a Bukowski novel on a blacklisted LP, and this time what it looked like was just what it proved to be. This is one of the many callbacks to the upsides, which is a signature move of one of Soupy's and mine favorite bands, The Hold Steady. On Everything I Own fits in a backpack from the upsides, he's also packing, and he stacks Heavier Than Heaven, Lonelier Than God, an album from the Philly punk band Blacklisted, on top of his copy of Charles Bukowski's the famous Drunken Morose author's You Get So Alone Sometimes That It Just Makes Sense. On the upsides, he's like, I know how this looks. It looks like I'm repressed, listening to depressing music, reading depressing poetry, but I'm not. These are just the things that I like. And on Suburbia, he says, okay, now it's exactly what it looks like. I'm lonely, I'm depressed. Bukowski poem from the collection that gives a good sense of his style. When we were kids, laying around the lawn on our bellies, we often talked about how we'd like to die. And we all agreed on the same thing. We'd all like to die fucking. Although none of us had done any fucking. And now that we are hardly kids any longer, we think more about how not to die. And although we're ready, most of us would prefer to do it alone, under the sheets, now that most of us have fucked our lives away. I know. Soupy continues and says, "Hey Jess, I woke up older carrying 2 years and the bags under my eyes. They were together for 2 years and he believes that the weight of their relationship has manifested itself physically. I left a note up on your bed that said, hey, thanks again for everything you did." Again on the upsides, he wrote a very sweet song, a song he called his favorite on the record, called "Hey Thanks." That was for Jess and featured backup vocals from Rachel Minton, her favorite singer. So this is a nod to that song. And honestly, this sounds, for the most part, like a pretty healthy breakup, right? Of course, we haven't had her side of the story, but Soupy seems gracious for what they have had here. Finally, in the bridge, Soupy sings, "When John introduced Woke Up New and St. Augustine, I knew I wasn't alone. When I woke up here without you, there was nothing to do but pack up and go home." Soupy had seen the Mountain Goats, whose lead singer is John Darnielle, for the first time at a festival in St. Augustine, Florida. Darnielle is known as quite the storyteller, and he introduced Woke Up New with a story about what it was about. Here's Soupy describing it. "Before he played it, he told this story about how you wake up in the morning and everything is fine that one split second, and then you remember, oh fuck, I broke up with the person that I love yesterday. And then the darkness rushes in from all sides, and you just start crying right away. The way he told the story was really funny and self-depreciating, but it had a lot of truth and pain to it as well. And at the end of the story, he said, for whoever feels this way in the crowd, I wrote this song for you." Darnielle has also said previously that it's a song about a person for whom everything has just now collapsed. Just now. So Soupy hears the story behind this song, and then the song itself, and it makes him feel less alone. For the nerds out there, this little bridge is actually a double reference, according to Soupy himself. Its structure is similar to this line from the Whole Steady B-side, "Girls Like Status." It was song number 3 on John's last CD, "I'm Gonna Make It Through This Year If It Kills Me." And it almost killed me. And that's a reference to the Mountain Goats song "This Year," which has that exact "If It Kills Me" line, and the Hold Steady's own album, "Almost Killed Me." It never stops, people. Never stops. So Soupy has just broken up with Jess and has to move out of their apartment. And on top of that, the upsides is out, and everyone's looking to Soupy as some sort of pop punk sage, someone who truly understood them. Which brings us to perhaps the saddest line on the record. "The fountain was off." This refers to an upside song, "Logan Circle," in which the titular fountain being on was a sign of hope. Here, it's off, implying a certain level of hopelessness. He sings of trying to hold it together, but irony has found cracks in the foundation. Since he's going around supporting this record about positivity, while his life is actually being upended, "The fountain is off" is an acknowledgement of that irony. Now, very quickly, I do gotta call out Soupy on the line, "I try so hard to become some great white hope." This is a reference to Jack Johnson, one of the first black boxers whose success was so hated by whites that the public clamored for some, quote, great white hope to take Johnson down. James Jeffries stepped up, and in 1910, Johnson defeated Jeffries in the, quote, fight of the century. With their great white hopes dashed, whites in 25 states and 50 cities rioted. In 1946, Johnson died in a car wreck after angrily speeding away from a diner in North Carolina. Why? The diner had refused to serve him because he was black. That's all to say that great white hope is a very loaded term and not one that contains any positive connotations. But obviously, Soupy didn't mean those things. Most people don't know the history of that and was just pulling on the term because it was around. But, you know, songwriters out there, like, watch your references. Anyway, Soupy sings, "I'm not a self-help book. I'm just a fucked up kid." Really to all the kids out there that are coming to him for advice after the upsides. One of my favorite lines on the whole record is one of those Ginsberg quotes. I don't have roses in the closet, but I've got pictures in the drawer. And it's everything left in me not to stare at them anymore. He's dealing with this intense breakup, but he's willing himself to not dwell on it, to not drown in it. Meanwhile, he's got these kids at shows asking him how he stays so positive. It's a hard line to walk. And finally, Soupy proclaims, it's not about forcing happiness. It's about not letting sadness win. At this point, it's not even about being happy or content or joyful. It's simply surviving. He's got his back against the wall. He's on the ropes, and he's just trying to make it out of here. The line, I'm not sad anymore, is mentioned a few times on the upsides, and Soupy says he realized that line was not a victory speech, but a battle cry. The war of mental illness, of depression, of anxiety, goes on and on and on. And you can be better, but like a lot of illnesses, it's always going to be there. So instead of working to just proclaim, I'm happy now, that's it, I did it, Soupy is working towards feeling like his head is above water, that he can see the shore, and that he knows that he has the strength to get there. Simpsons fans will know the title of the song comes from a 9th season episode with a framed newspaper article with the same headline. In the track Suburbia, the first of that triptych I mentioned earlier, that are memories from Soupy's hometown of Lansdale, he mentioned that a fire at the local bowling alley was probably set intentionally in order to collect insurance money, especially because he said it was a cigarette, but Soupy knew there were plenty of cigarette burns in the carpet that had never caught the place on fire. He paints a bleak picture overall, saying the whole town feels dead, and honestly, he can't blame it. Soupy is coming to grips with how the current reality of his town doesn't live up to the one in his memories. My Life as a Pigeon, the fifth track, is a big fuck you to all the Wonder Years haters out there. There's really no other way to interpret this song. All that anxiety he had about people liking his band, about not being taken seriously because they started out as a joke band, about not being able to placate those early fans, comes bursting out into an angry resolution. It's like you're drawing battle lines in your head for a war that doesn't exist and I don't want to fight it. It's not worth it. And then he takes a direct shot at those kids who are never satisfied with anything after their first EP, Won't Be Pathetic Forever. This is the shit that I don't teach you how to deal with, like an army of self-righteous kids that only like the 7-inch. I'm putting miles between myself and this bullshit. Now, these kids exist in every scene, right? The sniveling indie kids who won't listen to any Modest Mouse after the moon in Antarctica. Those drunken red wine film school kids who will tell you that pie is the best thing Darren Aronofsky has ever done. Spoiler, it isn't. Hell, there are probably some Picasso purists that only accept the blue period as his true work. These kids are always hiding in the corners of shows, ready to well actually you at every moment. We should not hate them, though. We should pity them. These fake gatekeepers are so terrified of having an opinion that they simply adopt a hardline contrarian one, some safely opposite opinion that isn't actually too dangerous, and then shout it from every Instagram story they can. They have no taste of their own. Listening to music for them is a chore, a slog through the drivel that is every album released after they graduated high school. And it's okay. These people are, on the whole, a monument to their own worst fear. They are, quite simply, unimportant, and they know that. If you encounter a gatekeeper, be nice, but feel free to send them my way, and I'll tell them why Children of Men wasn't actually a good movie, and why Magic Mike XXL was the best film of 2015.
Saw the Gospel of Thomas. You shot some reversal film in Anchor Wide. And this book you once read said there's less people dead at this point now than those who are not. And this film we once saw was reviled for its flaws, but it's
Summers in PA is about exactly that. Summer's back in Pennsylvania. And it's just about that magical time in your life where everyone's home from college or wherever, and you just get to make bad decisions with your friends. Soupy and his crew ended up at a casino and then at Denny's. My friends and I broke into country club swimming pools and then went to Mag's. For making a pro-cons list of staying in your hometown, this is definitely on the pro side. Dan and Andy of 4 Years Strong punctuate that in their guest vocals. We're sick of running away. We'll stay. We'll stay. We'll stay.
Summer came on way too strong and the radio played all new songs. So I smiled and hum along, I hum along.
Soupy acknowledges that there's something about weeknights in the suburbs. There's something about me and all my friends. There's also an Outsiders reference, which I don't know if kids these days have seen, but it was a 1983 movie about greaser kids directed by Francis Ford Coppola. Yes, that Francis Ford Coppola, and starring Rob Lowe, Emilia Estevez, Matt Dillon, Tom Cruise, and Patrick Swayze. Yes, that Rob Lowe, Emilio Estevez, Matt Dillon, Tom Cruise, and Patrick Swayze. They're a group of very attractive young men who would be loosely referred to as the Brat Pack. I don't know, ask your older brother. It was a thing. As I talked about briefly, religion was a big part of the suburbia that Soupy grew up in. He attended Catholic school for a year and also attended night school classes at a Catholic institution. The song I Won't Say the Lord's Prayer is a full-throated screed against the hypocrisy and fear-based tactics of organized Christianity. His take on religion is nothing new, but rarely shared in the pop-punk scene. For every out loud atheist in the scene, Lord Jane Grace, Kevin Devine, Frank Turner, there's just as many vocally Christian bands. Manchester Orchestra, Me Without You, Julian Baker, and of course David Bazan is now somewhere in between. The song caused controversy on the message boards, which I guess were still a thing in 2011, and caused Soupy to lead off a future song, An American Religion, with the line, "Sorry what's in the magazines, I know it wasn't fair of me, but I'm spitting ink onto the pages like blood through broken teeth." Let's look at the song itself. One of the first lines is, "If Lot was righteous, I'd rather not be." This is an allusion to the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, where Abraham had negotiated with God that if he could find 10 righteous men in the city of Sodom, he wouldn't destroy it. Angels came to Lot's house to protect him because God deemed him righteous. Well, the city folk, known to be gay, it's where we get the word sodomy, go to Lot's house and demand to have sex with the angels. The people don't know they're angels. And Lot is like, "Gay sex is super gross. I'd rather you'd fuck my virgin daughters instead." And that's just one story. I didn't write that. That's just one story. As they fled Sodom, the daughters were scared they'd never have children again, and so they got Lot drunk, and Lot had sex with both his daughters. Yeah. So, back to the line. Supi says if that is what you call righteous, he is going to pass on that distinction. He then says they don't ask you to think, just to repeat after me, and assume you're too careless to look at it critically. You'll stop progress if it contradicts what you're told to believe. And this is Supi's biggest point, that believing in God is fine, but if these beliefs stop progress, such as not believing in climate change, evolution, fair access to the legal practice of abortion, recognition of the rights of gay, trans, and queer folks, well, that's where he has a problem. I want to talk about, to me, the harshest line in the whole song. If we're all just Christians or lions, then I think I'd rather be on the side with sharper teeth. Damn. This is a reference to Roman times when the city would gather to watch Christians be devoured by lions in the Colosseum. And he's basically saying that he'd rather skew feral and undisciplined, like a lion, than the constricting ways of organized Christianity. Coffee Eyes, like Summers in PA, is also on the pro side of being in your hometown. Supi remembers being there for his 20th birthday, January 17th, 2006, and now they're back after a few years, and the waitress, Patty, was still there and still knew his drink order. The diner in question, if you're ever in Lansdale, is called Michael's Family Restaurant, open 24 hours. They currently have a 16-ounce porterhouse for $21.99. How could you go wrong? $2.27, January 17th, 2006. Here in a diner with my friends, talking about how the year went. A few years later, I walk in, Patty knew my drink, and she asked where the hell we've been. You used to come here every night, it's not the same without you, kids. I cut my hair in a piece of glass. The sign we found in that dead in the parking lot. I spent the rest of the night in the ER. I cut my hair in a piece of glass. Supi then starts to list memories he has from Michael's. The last time we found Dave half dead in the parking lot, spent the rest of the night in the ER, and I cut my hand on a piece of glass, and I hope the scar lasts, so I don't forget that there's been a table for me there. Supi is deeply nostalgic for a place that remains steady. Wherever he is in the world, he knows that this diner has a table for him, and that Patty will be there bringing him his usual drink. I believe in the power of places. I've seen the desk where Hemingway wrote Old Man and the Sea. I even saw the boat that inspired it. I sat in the same cafes in Paris that Scott and Zelda Fitzgerald sipped absinthe in. I cried on the stoop of my old apartment in New York years after I had lived there. I got engaged by the lighthouse on the tip of Montauk Point from Play Crack the Sky. I knew I should have listened to the rest of that song before I did that. Place means something because they become containers for our memories. A library of nostalgia and regret safely sealed in a Long Island lighthouse or the bottom of a copper glass in a Parisian cafe. Here, Supi's are stored in Michael's diner, and he finds deep comfort in remembering even the bad times, even the time he cut his hand, praying even for the scar to last, a permanent memory of this time and place. He then lists some of those memories. A Thanksgiving night when Colleen left, when Monica's, Mon's, tires were slashed by her ex-boyfriend Mike, but since they were all friends, it became a hilarious memory later down the line. That same Mike, by the way, is the subject of Cul-de-Sac, off of Greatest Generation, which finds Soupy breaking up with a friend over his continued drug use. He ends with, "So you can try to forget or say it's the past. You know you'll always end up right back where you left." Which is a hint to how this whole story ends. You can ignore the past and the places you've come from, but those memories are still ingrained in your brain. Those childhood experiences still inform your perspective. You either retain the friends you have back then, and then everyone revels in the same mythology, or you cut your friends loose and make new ones, make new mythologies. But all those old stories are still there. You still have the scars. You always end up right back where you left. Because when you go back to these places, the diner is still there. Patty still knows your order, as if you had never left in the first place.
Town is on the end. This one, oh, lonely homeless man. For as long as I can think back, he was a Vietnam vet. He got beaten to death in Memorial Park under one of the benches, and the cops all said it was probably kids, but nobody ever found them. I guess they stopped trying. And I wonder if they ever did.
I've given you all the next track is another in the Suburbia triptych. This is another true retelling of a sad story about Soupy's hometown. A man there, I mean, you can look up the story, was sleeping in Memorial Park, a baseball field. He was sleeping in the dugout when he was found beaten to death. He was 53. The case was never solved. And he wasn't even actually homeless. He just liked sleeping under the stars ever since he had been deployed to Vietnam. Going to go out of order for a second. I want to talk about track 11, You Made Me Want to Be a Saint. Close friend of the band, Mike Pallone, passed away while they were writing this record. Many lyrics were taken from what Soupy wrote in a blog post right after the funeral. Evidently, Mike was a big Get Up Kids fan. It's mentioned here twice. Once when Soupy says, "I buried half a decade there. It was the better part," which is a reference to the Get Up Kids' Better Half, which says, "I saw my better half, the better half of a decade, slip through my hands." And Because I Still Hear You in the bass drum beat After I'll Catch You, which is also a Get Up Kids song and contains an extra bass drum hit after the song finishes. Mike was 23 when he died of a heroin overdose. He had been fighting the addiction, which had started with Oxycontin, for years.
At a time, an unspoken balance here. A bridge for so many years.
Don't Let Me Cave In pulls from that last line of Coffee Eyes. You know you'll always end up right back where you left. The song is a very stressed out, broken down Soupy staying with a friend in Chicago who drives all the way out to pick him up. In between this, Soupy drops one of the most succinct, profound lines about relationships. There comes a day when you rectify who you are with who you want to be with, and I can't make the two things coexist. Soupy has a different idea of the type of person he wants to be now, and he found that this was incompatible with Jess, the woman he was with. And isn't that what so many relationship struggles come down to? Rectifying who we are with who we want to be with. In the middle of this short trip to Chicago, he sees his friend Evan from the band Intuit Over It. He mentions the Sears Tower, and there's actually a Sears Tower in Philadelphia that he watched being imploded on television with his dad when he was a kid. He said in interviews that whenever he sees Chicago's Sears Tower, he always thinks of that memory. Soupy is at his lowest point here. He's a mess, he's aimless, trying to find a home in Chicago, finding again only destructive memories of his youth. Don't let me cave in, he says. But it sounds like he already has. That's continued in the first part of Hoodie Weather. His previous rose-colored look at Michael's Diner is shattered when he discovers that the waitresses or girls that graduated with me have problems with Oxy and can't recall what I had to drink. Girls that never got out got hooked on dope. And unlike Patty, they can't even remember his order a minute after they asked for it. He continues to lambast the zombies still stuck in his town. No one knows where they're going. They just know they want out of here badly. Like cigarettes dropped on a highway, they smash and scatter and burn out somewhere else without knowing. He's getting at this idea that there are all these kids who say they want to get out, but are making no moves to do so. They don't know where they want to go. They just want to get out of here. And even when they do get out, they just burn out somewhere else, scattered like discarded cigarette butts. But at this point, there's a small turn. He notices that the veins on the back of his hands are like his grandmother's. He feels all the history that is baked into him. He has a hint of a South Philly accent. Lansdale's north of Philly, which either came from his time in Philly in college, or perhaps his parents were from South Philly, and he's again commenting on the roots that keep him there. He finally acknowledges that the town isn't perfect. It's got lies to tell, he says. And he's always going to drift between nostalgia, disgust, contentment. He can't keep from digging up these bones forever. But for now, for just right now, he's going to settle down, find some solid ground here. He says, I lost my footing trying to get home last winter, referring to the bad state he was in while riding the upsides. But for now, he made it. And after acknowledging the insanity of the past year, growing up means watching my heroes turn human in front of me, which is a specific reference to becoming friends with Newfound Glory, and another shot at Get Stoked on It. The songs we wrote at 18 seem short-sighted and naive. He comes to an answer to the question he wrote this album to consider. Where is home? And what if it doesn't feel like home when I get there? So the weather breaks. I'll pull my hoodie up over my face. I won't run away, because as fucked as this place got, it made me. Yeah, it gets cold out there. And yeah, there's a ton of problems with this town. But it's home. And it made Soup be into who he is now. Without it, would there be a Wonder Years? Would any of this have happened? Soupy didn't just come home. He made peace with his past. Growing up means watching my heroes turn And Now I'm Nothing, the last track and last third of the triptych, is a coda to the story. As Soupy muses on his future and where he goes from here, he finds himself in Lansdale and Memorial Park where they found that dead drifter. There's no point to just letting go, and as long as you've known me, I've been backing up slowly. I won't end up underneath the snow. He keeps going back and forth, saying he's not just going to let go and end up in Lansville forever. He's going to try to get out. And he pledges not to die here in the snow. At the same time, he finally remembers the manger scene. He said in an interview that he finds it funny that the manger is placed between two cannons, and that no one finds that ironic but him. He says, I know that I'm introspective when broken, but I've been spending most of my nights here alone, and that doesn't scare me like it did a year ago. He hermits up when he gets sad, and he's been spending a lot of time alone. But now he sees that as just part of the healing process. He no longer feels like he needs to grieve in some prescribed way. It's okay to pull in, to contract in times of high drama. It's okay to go back home. It's okay to miss a place filled with burnouts and broken dreams. And he leaves us with that final contradiction. I guess it's looking hopeless. We're a city left digging out cars in unison and humming like we've healed. I know we've got miles to go, but I'm putting my shoulder to the wheel. He acknowledges the sadness of the town and its hypocritical ways of thinking that everything is fine when it's not. But he ends on a hopeful note. I know we've got miles to go, but I'm putting my shoulder to the wheel. Putting your shoulder to the wheel means to work very, very hard. He knows that he himself and his hometown has a lot of work to do to get better. But God damn it, he's putting his shoulder to the wheel. Happy for Katie. You know, she's married, she looks happy, she does art and continues to make some of her own. She figured out her life. I'm figuring out mine. Maybe it's okay that we're glad we aren't still like we were when we were teenagers. And maybe it's okay to look back on that time and just smile. Perhaps Lawrence Arms said it best. There's a city in the park where I used to go, but now it's covered with fences and cops and light posts. And I never go back, even if it was the same. But it kills me to know that it's changed. All right, we did it. Took a while, but we did it. The Wonder Years continued to blow up after this record came out. The follow-up to Suburbia was called The Greatest Generation. And along with the upsides, those albums are referred to as the Depression Trilogy or the Growing Up Trilogy. The Wonder Years, both musically and lyrically, have since expanded in scope. If you're going to the Wonder Years show in Austin the day after Thanksgiving, I will be there. Come say hi. I'll be the one who looks a little too old to be at a Wonder Years concert. This podcast now has a t-shirt designed by me that says I want to make out and listen to the sound of the story. And it has this cool picture of a couple kids kissing. It's great. Trust me. You can find that in the link in my Twitter bio. That's the easiest way. Twitter bio, I'm at David Callison, K-A-L-L-I-S-O-N. And you can email me at dcallison@mac.com. Write me if you're lonely, if you want to chat, whatever. I'm here for you, all right? We're all in this together. So that's me at Twitter. Look at the t-shirt. Buy it if you want to. Okay, I think that's it. I'll post on Twitter soon about when the next episode drops and which album it is. As of recording this, I am 89 days sober. Stay alive and stay free.
Same fucking payphone.
I'm so you did. And I just need enough scratch to buy a bus ticket, mail some to the Thunderbird, and pay my mom back.